It has been said that if you don't think you're vulnerable to commit adultery or to have an affair, that settles it. You actually are vulnerable if you don't realize you actually could be potentially. We're going to talk about this right now with a longtime counselor who's worked at Chuck Swindoll's church. His name is Dave Carter, C-A-R-D-E-R. He's the author of a new book by Moody Press called Anatomy of an Affair. And so it's so good to have you, Mr. Carter, on the program. Thank you for joining us.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, so first of all, let's deal with the word itself, affair versus adultery. Affair kind of sugarcoats it.
Well, some people feel that way. I personally use infidelity, adultery, affairs pretty much for all the classifications except class three. That's not an affair. That's not a relationship. It's just sexual compulsivity. But I just kind of use it interchangeably. Unfortunately, maybe, but that's the way I do it.
Okay. First of all, let's find out a little bit about this. You have been working for years with a church context. Who would have ever thought in a church context in dealing with couples who profess to be Christians and so forth that you unfortunately have to deal with the problem of adultery?
Oh, you do. In fact, I got into this ministry, so to speak, because two of the first senior pastors I had worked with ran off with other women in the church, and when the second one did, I decided I'm going back to graduate school, and I'm going to figure out why this happens, because it just destroys not only families, but congregations. It ruins careers. It's like an indelible black mark on everyone that's involved. And, of course, everybody has a story about adultery. It's happened in families or friends or something, and so everyone feels that they have a right to an opinion about what should or should not happen. So it just complicates the whole situation.
Do you think it's important for us to, in a sense, realize we could be potentially vulnerable and therefore just in knowing that we can prepare and hedge and do everything we can to make sure it doesn't happen?
Well, Jerry, in this culture, you're going to be attracted to members of the opposite sex. When men and women work out together, play together, minister together, serve together, teach together, you're going to come across people that impress you someday with admiration for them, maybe even some affirmation. But the point is, even though that happens, you don't need to cultivate it. You don't need to grow it. But the tricky thing is to realize this is a mood-altering experience, and it's very appealing to keep it going because of what it does for you, the individual that's involved with it.
Okay, when we talk about affairs or adultery, by definition, does that mean it has to be or has to have a sexual component?
It has to have an erotic component to it in many ways, and it always has a mood-altering component to it, always. You begin to feel different around this person. You have a brighter outlook on life around this person. Your heart might even race a little heavier, faster, etc. And it's mood altering. All these kinds of relationships are. But eventually, in this mood alteration, you'll begin to do one of two things. You'll either leave it and recognize it, maybe talk with your spouse about it, or you will cultivate and grow it, and when you do that, you begin to talk about, you move from the external outside world, professional world, into the internal personal world, how you're feeling about things. And when you do that, you're starting to starve the marriage and feed the friendship.
I have known somebody where there was a situation where he was claiming that he never, you know, went to bed with this other woman, but he spent so much time with her that, you know, people who knew them thought, surely this is a married couple, and they weren't. He was sort of having what has been called a spiritual affair, if that makes sense.
I wouldn't call it spiritual. I would call it an emotional affair.
Okay.
I would call that an emotionally charged friendship. And some of those I've seen them last 30 years. I've seen people get fired for those kinds of friendships because they are mood alteration. And like I said, you cannot have that kind of intimacy with someone other than your spouse. You can't do it with two people. It's either going to be the friend or the spouse. And I tell you, I don't know about you, Jerry, but my wife would never tolerate a friend like that, for me anyway,
yeah.
Because it's just too threatening all the time. And you're always on the short end of the stick if you're the spouse in that kind of a situation.
Sure. Well, you've been married 49 years. Were you ever tempted to commit adultery?
Oh, my wife and I have had several attractions like that. We've talked about over the years. Some of which go clear back to when we were first married and working with college-age kids. And we were just out of college ourselves. So the point is, it's going to happen. The point
the
is,
attractions.
Secondly...
The attractions are going to happen, not the actual...
Oh, attractions will happen, absolutely.
Right.
And they're very innocent in the first couple of stages and development. But it's what you do with the attraction that kind of determines what... going to happen.
Okay, so are there primary reasons or circumstances that actually cause married couples to wander?
Oh, yeah. There's reasons both within you, your own personal story. We talk about those risk factors in the book. There's also seasons you pass through that put you at more at risk. You know, when Jesus went through the temptations in Matthew and Luke and was victorious, in Luke 4, it says this, the devil left him for a more opportune time.
Mm.
So there are times when you are more likely to fail, and the devil's checking up on that all the time.
Yeah.
So there's seasons you pass through. There's a marital void or emptiness that you've always longed for. For instance, use Gary Chapman's metaphor with love languages. If you have a certain love language that's not being met, it's your love language. You're more vulnerable.
Mm.
So all those kinds of factors, contributing factors, they're not causative. They're contributing factors. The more of those you can identify after adultery takes place, the more likely as a couple you're going to survive.
Hmm. All right. You, I understand that there are different types of extramarital affairs you want to comment on.
Uh-huh. Yeah, basically, we talk about five in the field, five different kinds. And, you know, when I was a seminary grad first looking at this, I thought adultery was adultery was adultery. But that's not true. It's very different. We have the one-night stand, that class one. That's a David and Bathsheba story. There wasn't any relationship. It was just immediate. Then we have a class two that's very emotionally entangled. Lots of feelings involved in that. That makes it harder to separate the two partners. And that would be a Samson and Delilah story. They never had sex in the Bible. In fact, when we see the picture of him, his head is in her lap and they're talking. But he could not stay away from that woman, even though he knew she was trying to kill him.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty hardy addiction.
Yeah.
Class three is kind of the story of happened to Eli, the priest. He had two sons who are also priests. They kept picking women out of line on the way to sacrifice, take them into tents, have sex with them, turn them loose. God said, stop it. He wouldn't. God killed those two sons, and God also took Eli's life prematurely because he wouldn't stop it. Class four is what we call an add-on affair, which meets a very specific void and is somewhat like we were talking about earlier in the broadcast, where it's not a threat to the marriage, but it meets a marital void. And this couple... they only see each other during this exercise, like on a worship team or in a hiking club or feeding the poor. They don't have lunches. They don't talk back and forth. They don't text, tweet. They're not going to leave their spouses, but they have an emotionally charged friendship that at times or sporadically at times becomes erotic. Oh. And then that last kind of affair, that last class five, we call it reconnection because it only started in 1995 when the internet came up. But that's when you get back in touch with an old girlfriend, old boyfriend. And the danger about that is the infatuation you had for that person does not have to grow or be developed. It's already stored in your brain. It's the same thing that happens when you listen to music of adolescence. You think about sport experiences, dating, cars you drove. It makes you feel good. And this one will, too. In fact, we say if you stay in touch with that old boyfriend or girlfriend for 30 days, you will become confused about your marriage because your spouse doesn't generate those kind of feelings. And if you continue to stay in touch 30 days, you'll be finding ways to sleep or to meet and sleep with them.
Wow.
0 to 60.
Wow. Are there ways to basically fall in love with your spouse all over again to you know, strengthen what you have so that you won't go out into the streets and, you know, seek it elsewhere?
Well, children in a marriage come from the womb, narcissistic and egocentric. A child will take everything you give it and never be satisfied. And we had four of them, and I love kids, and I love the grandkids, okay? But they'll never say, oh, Dad, Mom, you've been so busy taking care of us. Why don't you go out for dinner tonight? Go away for a weekend. You know, kind of refresh yourself. Here's some money to cover the cost. They never do that. They can't do that.
Right.
So you have to steal the time and the money from your kids to enrich your marriage. And if you don't spend money on your marriage in this day and age, you have a very difficult time staying together. You'll sit down at the breakfast table when your last kid leaves home, and you'll look across the table at this person, and you'll say, who in the heck are you?
Yeah.
So you've been so busy taking care of and raising kids that you've not really taken care of and nurtured the marriage. But you can do this pretty easily. I'll give you an exercise. Both of you sit down, the two spouses, and you make a list of what we call eight great, your eight greatest experiences in this relationship. It can't be with any other couples. It cannot be with the kids.
Only with you.
It can't be only your, with your wedding spouse. Day.
Okay.
Pardon?
Yeah, only with your spouse.
Yeah, only with your spouse, just the two of you. Make a list of the eight greats. It can go back to dating. Just make a list.
Okay.
Well, good marriages have 3 to 5 that match. And so let's say you have four. A couple has four. She gets 5, he gets 6, she gets 7, he gets 8. Those are the things you do best. Those are the things that brought you and kept you together. And most couples get in trouble because they stop doing what they do best.
Hmm.
So you could spend $4,500 on each one of those experiences, if there are 8 of them, and you would still not pay what it would cost to get a divorce in Orange County.
Wow. Yeah, that's where you practice, I assume. So this is very interesting to me. When you said earlier that when the last child leaves the nest, the couple sits down and is like, who are you? Do people break up at that time sometimes?
Oh, yeah. There's an ongoing rise in divorce among marriages when the last child enters college. And they think it doesn't hurt the college kid, but, literature is full of wounded stories of kids whose parents divorced as soon as they leave home.
Oh. Yeah, that's really something. Let me give your website, by the way. It's davecarter.com. Carter is spelled C-A-R-D-E-R. The name of his book is Anatomy of an Affair. And we only have about 1 minute left, so what would you like to say as a closing thought? Go ahead and wax eloquent for 1 minute.
Well, I would say this. If I could help couples do one thing, that would be helpful to them. They need to focus on the positive experiences of identifying things they like about their spouse. There's a great assignment in there that you do for 30 straight days that has lots of research behind it.
Oh, good.
Secondly, they need to make sure they work hard at filling their spouse's love tank. Third, they need to understand the differences between their interactive patterns, like why certain things happen and the fact of their childhood experiences influence on that kind of a attachment pattern. And last of all, you know what? You just need to say sometimes in the tough times, I'm going to hang in here. I'm not getting what I like. Marriages have changes in them. Maybe we can make a change for the better. But I'm vulnerable, and I need to pay attention to who I'm talking to and what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and the research shows that those who stick it out at the end of the day, it's a very far much more rewarding than if they didn't. Dave Carter? Yeah, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say absolutely, yeah.
Okay. DaveCarter.com. Carter is spelled C-A-R-D-E-R. Anatomy of an Affair, Moody Press Books. Thanks so much for being with us, sir. Appreciate it.
Oh, love it.
Okay, all the best. Bye-bye.